I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
You're listening to Flop Culture. This is a podcast all about flops, good and bad, and the ones in between. I'm your host, Fanula. I hope you're very well. I hope you enjoyed last week's episode on The Real Housewives of DC with Laura DeBarra, best-selling author. We love to see it, girls. Congratulations to her on her number one book, Garment Goddess. We knew it would be, didn't we? We knew it would be. Go listen to that if you haven't listened to it yet. If you have and you're ready for this week, let's get into the news. Another week down in Celebrity Big Brother, we had our next eviction. Lauren Simon from Real Housewives of Cheshire was the next celebrity that got the chop. And we also saw Sharon Osbourne leave as Big Brother's quote unquote celebrity lodger. Lots of rumours that they basically couldn't afford to keep her as a housemate. So they were like, will you just go in for 5 days and cause absolute chaos and bitch about loads of people and we'll be delighted? And she said, yeah, absolutely. So that's what she did. Someone who is continuing to cause chaos and will until he is inevitably booted out, which actually might be sooner than we think based on public reaction to this situation, Louis Walsh. So Louis Walsh has been dishing the dirt on everyone. We saw earlier in the series him talking with Sharon about their own relationships with Simon Cowell, who they both worked with on X Factor and various other projects. This week, however, he was talking about our very own Jedward and talking about managing Jedward. He was speaking about this with Fern Britton, the TV presenter, and a few other people. He actually he called them vile at one point. He said they were vile. I done 15 million quid for them. That's a direct quote. Don't at me about the English. I done 5 million quid with them. I swear on my mother's life. They were vile. They were novelty. They were great for the show, referring to X Factor. So Twitter fingers, Jedward, John and Edward, respectively. I don't know who was doing the tweeting, but ho-hum. They're straight on Twitter to kind of refute these claims and also fire back at Louis. And I'm pretty sure they've spoken out publicly about Louis before and about how they, maybe at one point they had a good relationship, I'm not sure, but at some point something changed and they've been very vocal about that and their own experience about X Factor and kind of that industry and stuff like that. But this response to these comments, this is what they wrote on Twitter. Girls Aloud hate Louis. Jedward hate Louis. Ronan Keating hates Louis. Because I think he referenced Ronan Keating as well on the show, Louis Walsh. All future acts should be made aware of what this vile man is really like. What an absolute weirdo with bad intentions for all. Does he like anyone? And while they were tweeting this, they were at Miss Gemma Collins' house, good friends with her. I'm pretty sure they actually did Celebrity Big Brother together, or their paths have crossed in some way where they are now friends, right? They're over with Gemma. They're watching this on TV. And what proceeds to happen is just like the funniest exchange ever. John or Edward, I'm not going to lie, I can't tell the two apart and I don't mean that disrespectfully, I just can't. One of them is on an absolute rant about what they've just witnessed and furiously defending themselves. You also have Gemma who is defending them but like prompting them to say things.
They were vile. But they've done well. But they were great. I don't find them to be great for them.
Louis, don't be slagging off my boys. They're not vile. They're beautiful in every single way.
I can't believe we're even watching you on the show. You're like a cat with nine lives. How much times can you slag off your acts? Girls Aloud, Boyzone, Ronan Keaton's absolutely a disgrace.
And didn't
you're a senile man who did nothing for us, who had no ideas. You're not even a manager. Simon Cowell made you who you are.
Didn't he without force you Simon into Cowell, an office Westside and make you make anything. A huge payment?
It's absolutely ridiculous. How dare you be on Big Brother? And I don't know why Gemma's interviewing us, but honestly, talk about throwing someone in the deep end. You're like a cat with nine lives. We gave you nine lives. We're sick of it. You didn't do anything for us. You are a person with not a brain between the two ears. You're on Big Brother. You're there, but your lights aren't on. First of all, Louis Walsh was never our manager. We met him four times. He never sent us flowers and disrespect to our mom multiple times. He tried to get us into dodgy contracts, which were at our mom, we would have signed.
He wanted us to sign our life away to people that we're not going to name, who've done all sorts to all his boy bands and girl bands. And how dare you, on television, try and define us when you're all those things. Have you listened to what you've done to your other acts? Boyzone, Girls Aloud, Westlife, they all hate you.
Yeah, you gave eating disorders to Girls Aloud. You called them fat, which they weren't. They were beautiful girls. You only have boy bands to make it look like you're doing something with your life when you're a bitter old man. Nothing against old people, but you obviously... I don't know what I'm saying.
Eat your dinner, boys. Come on.
But what people aren't seeing, if you miss these stories as well, they're at Gemma's house, but what... Gemma has made like a full Sunday roast of a Wednesday night, well, for them. Like, we're talking... And I have to say, it looks absolutely divine. Yorkshire's, the whole shebang, whatever. So it's just sitting in front of them while they're absolutely like kind of violently screaming about how they're being slandered and all that jazz. And then you have Gemma who's just like, I'm just so disappointed. Your dinner's gone cold, innit? And you've been waiting an hour because you had to hear these horrible lies. Sorry?
And I'm fuming because I've just cooked the boys a roast dinner, which I can't eat.
Like, we're for people. No matter what, we've always been there for people. We've had to put up with a lot of shit.
You have.
A lot of stuff.
We knew we didn't even get our flowers or acknowledge when our mom died.
But can you tell everyone? Please, just tell everyone.
To our best friend, Tara.
Louis Walsh is a cold-hearted bitch. He doesn't care about people. All he wants is money, money, money.
Can you tell everyone what he done to you in the office?
He forced them to an office to pay £70,000 to a
person. He never had our best interest. Never had our best interest. Was trying to keep us in check. Was trying to make us burn out. Had us here, had us there, everywhere. It was absolutely ridiculous. There was no plan. The fact that he treated Girls Aloud, the fact that Boyzone, anyone, no one has a good word to say about him. People are watching the show gobsmacked. I can't believe Simon Cowell, who helped him launch Westlife, saying shit about him. You just can't do that to friends and people that have given you a chance.
Like, no one was fucking ready for this. Like, I swear to God, all the drama. What's happening?
I'm just gutted you're eating your dinner an hour later. Enjoy it, please.
I will say, Gemma Collins was probably like, this could actually not have happened on a better day, because she comes out of it looking great as well, because she's defending her friends. We love it, girls. We love friendship. I know at this eviction, at Lauren's eviction, a lot of people shouting, get Louis out. Look, is what he said about Jedward nice? No. Is what he said about Jedward too? True? Fuck. Is what he said about Jedward nice? No. Is what he said about Jedward true? We don't know. Is what Jedward said about Louis true? We don't know. It's funny seeing the Irish people get very like defensive and protective of Jedward now. And I appreciate that. But people are calling for him to come out. Guys, I want him in if he's going to be spilling. Well, this isn't tea because it's just him kind of being, like, he's just calling someone names. Like, get back to the tea. Get back to, like, giving me actual goss. Or you may go out, actually, because otherwise it's just boring. Just my opinion. Just my opinion. What do you think? Hellflopculture@gmail.com or @flopculture_pod. Get in touch. Speaking of flops, speaking of music, let's get into this week's flop. A topic very close to my heart. Picture this. You're in the midst of a great series. You've been gripped from episode one. You cannot wait to see how the story ends. When, in the background, you hear a familiar tune. It's the Macarena. Only for some reason, it's dark. More sinister sounding. Soundtracking can make or break a show or a film. So why is this particular type of cover these moody, threatening versions of pop songs, why are they proving to be so popular? Joining me to discuss this trend is music journalist, songwriter, producer, and host of Switched on Pop from Vulture and New York Magazine, Charlie Harding. Enjoy. Charlie Harding, you are so welcome to Flop Culture. How are you doing?
I'm doing great today. I've been having a fun day listening to a lot of Beyonce country music. It's a historic moment.
Is that teasing a future episode of Switched on Pop? Can listeners expect that?
I just
shortly?
Taped it an hour ago. I think by the time this episode is released, my episode on Beyonce's country will be out.
Okay, well, I'm thrilled about that personally, as I'm sure listeners to this will be as well. I have brought you on for a different reason that I usually bring people on. So people usually come on and they pick their own flops that are very close to their heart for whatever reason. But which I will say, you're more than welcome to come back and do that at some point. But
thank you.
I actually wanted to talk about kind of a floppy trend that I'm seeing in popular music. So I said, I need to call in the big guns. I need to call in the experts. Myself and my friend, Dave Hannerty, who hosts another music podcast called No Encore, he had kind of called it these maudlin covers of pop songs. I want to kind of needle in a bit deeper. And someone actually on Twitter had said it. They've kind of put it better. They called it this slow, spooky song covers specifically for TV and film. And I want to ask before we kind of get into the nitty gritty, is it a trend you had noticed personally when you're watching TV and film? Are you seeing a lot of needle drops and you're like, what is this cover? This is bizarre.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And we can get into why I think people are doing it, both from a business and aesthetic reason. The first one that stands out to me would be like the cover of Creep at the end of The Social Network, the David Fincher movie about the making of Facebook, sung by, I think, like a children's choir. It's terrifying. It's haunting. It's in the end credits, so it's sort of a slightly different thing. Funny fact, the song Exit Music for a Film by Radiohead, who wrote Creep, was originally written to be the ending credits for the film Romeo and Juliet, Baz Luhrmann's film. I talked to him once, and he told me this. This is a well-known thing, but he told me that Radiohead was on the verge of breaking up. And because he had given them this task of writing the song, they were like reinvigorated and decided to stick together. But I don't think the song actually made it into the end of the film. I don't recall. Anyways, I'm going on too long. The place where I think this trend really peaked was Saturday Night Live. I don't know, 4 months ago, had a really funny sketch featuring the song Make Your Own Kind of Music by Mama Cass.
In which, basically, we
are back in time in the creation of the song, and the producer is talking to Mama Cass and says, this is going to be a hit. I love this song. Everyone is going to love it. And then they're going to forget about it. And then many decades later, a bunch of film and television producers are going to come back around to the song and realize it's going to make great soundtracking and everyone's going to remember it again. And it's going to soundtrack when people are in their lowest low or they're being attacked and hit by a ninja and all these, you know, sort of absurd conditions that would happen in a Hollywood film in which you would get the scoring for Mama Cass's Make Your Own Kind of Music.
Oh, this song is going to be everywhere, Mama. And then everybody's going to forget about it for a long, long time.
Oh, no. Really?
Oh, yeah, baby. But in about 40, 50 years, I think it's going to start showing up in a bunch of movies, baby.
Wow, movies!
Oh, yeah, because it's a perfect song to go under a slow-mo montage where the main character snaps and goes on a rampage.
It is?
Oh, yeah, baby. Yeah. Let me show you. Movie is zombies take over the world, you see. And I'm the main girl, and I'm all alone.
Nobody can tell you.
Zombies eating on fire.
There's only one song worth singing.
I should just give up.
They may try and sell ya.
I'm a victim.
Cause it hangs them up.
Or maybe not.
To see someone like you.
It's time to fight back. I grab a shotgun.
But you've got to.
So these two stick in my mind as great examples of pop songs reappropriated for film and television in ways that it alters their meaning.
Mm. What, in your opinion, makes a good cover? I know this is such a broad question, but like when you're listening to covers, what are you looking out for that you're like, yeah, this was a successful reinterpretation of the original song? I know it's obviously very personal as well, but I'd just be interested to hear your opinion on it.
I think it primarily needs to either enhance or, better yet, alter the core emotion of the song, which is challenging to do because ideally the song has been written in a way that the words and music are in some kind of conversation that they announce a very clear core emotion. And so one way of altering the emotion of a song might be to put it into a minor key or to slow it way down or have it sung by a maudlin children's choir, and all of a sudden the meaning of the words flips and it feels as if maybe there's irony or some new kind of underlying undiscovered emotion. Ultimately, songs are about communicating emotions and feelings. They're really bad at, writing policy. You know, they're really bad at communicating important information, like how to get to the supermarket. They're very good at communicating emotions. That's the core job. And so a good cover needs to, in some way, play with your expectation that you have built with that song, the emotion that it's going to give you. It's got to do something different with it.
You mentioned the style kind of peaking there with that SNL sketch, but obviously we also talked about The Social Network and how far back that goes in terms of covers. When I was talking to you initially and prepping for this, I was trying to think of successful iterations. And I will say, I'm not 100% sure if this falls 100% into the category, but one where I think it does work is the Beyonce's cover of her own, speaking of Beyonce, her cover of her own song, Crazy in Love, that was used for some of the initial trailers for 50 Shades of Grey. And it was kind of mega slow down, mega spooky, mega... It was definitely to kind of be like, this is a sexy movie about sexy things. Oh, here we are. And this is kind of a darker, moodier version. And it's sexy, but it's a little bit... Maybe it's bad. It's just so deep in your eyes. I touch you. Example where I was like, yeah, that's where it like was 100% pulled off. Because I feel like some of the more recent examples, which we'll get into in a while, I feel like sometimes they're purely dropped in as needle drops to kind of chase virality, I feel, or kind of become water cooler talking moments. But then I think it takes you out of the watching of the film or TV show. What do you think? I know you just said there that you think there's a business and an aesthetic reason as to why these particular covers are kind of popping off.
Sure. And I did know, I think when I was quoting the Mama Cass example, sometimes songs are sort of just used in new ways. And I think in that example, it's not, there has been places where that song has been a cover or an alteration or sometimes just the original recording. Sometimes the way that a song is used can actually so meaningfully change the emotion that it actually doesn't need to be a cover. But one of the primary reasons why covers are going to happen from a business perspective is that when you want to use a song and sync it to film or television, you have to get the rights to that song. And the rights of that song exist in two forms, the master recording and the publishing, which represents the song and the music. Those are not always owned by the same rights holder. And it might be expensive to get both of those rights. In fact, it's often easier and less expensive to get the rights of the publishing and not the master recording. And if you have the rights of the publishing, you now have the right to make your own cover of that song. Or in fact, you might be able to find someone else's cover that already exists. You can just go ask them. And it makes the entire process of clearing a song for film and television significantly easier. So that's one reason why these are very popular. In fact, I'm sure there's cases where constantly a director has placed in music. They're like, we want to use this song. They try to go and clear it, and someone is holding it up, and they say, all right, let's just use a cover of the song instead. There's very practical reasons. But as we were discussing earlier, you know, from an emotional point of view, maybe you want to find a song that which is a pared back version of that song so that it, you know, changes, it takes a happy feeling and makes it more circumspect or what have you. So the cover has both a business reason and it also can help change the emotion of the song.
You mentioned the Creep cover and I mentioned Our Lord and Savior Beyonce. Can you think of any other good examples or examples where it's really worked for you and you've loved the reinterpretation and you've thought it's fit really well with whatever they were trying to convey on screen?
Gosh, I'm a bit of a purist. I love original recordings. When do I love a cover more than the original? It's very rare. I can give an example, though, maybe not of a cover, but rather of a really well-done film and sync, which one of these sort of places where a song totally transforms its meaning comes from first the book, then the film American Psycho, in which you hear Phil Collins' music, Susu Studio, being the soundtrack to a murder scene. And this overjoyous, bubbly song fundamentally contrasts with the imagery. So I often like an original song being placed and altering its feeling.
This is the studio. A great, great song. Personal favorite.
But Taking a track and especially iconic songs, they're so hard to redo and give and do justice. So for that reason, unfortunately, I think I'm out. I don't think I have a good example of one where I'm like, this is the one I love. They're all flops.
Well, look, I was going to say...
I don't really mean it, but...
Well, I was going to say, I have more examples of where it does it. Like, the Beyonce example is the only example I have where I'm like, oh yeah, that 100% worked. Like, even, I'm not sure if you watched the most recent season of True Detective, Night Country.
I've not watched it, no.
Okay, I'm not sure if you should, but anyway, that's a separate conversation. There's,
well, what did they do? Spoilers, I don't care.
Well, okay, I won't spoil it, but I will say it was kind of the reason I wanted to have this conversation in the first place, because there are a lot of significant needle drops in it, but the needle drops are covers, and they're these moody, atmospheric, kind of somber covers of huge, huge songs. The main one is probably Twist and Shout. Twist and Shout is used diegetically at the start. It's like playing on a on a VCR and Jodie Foster comes in and is like, I hate this song, and like slams it off, whatever. And then we see it at the end of the season. But again, it's like this moody, weird cover. And when I say it is so jarring. And even like the online reaction to it has been like, that's again, we have this Twitter user, Derpo or X user or whatever, Derpo377 said, True Detective, Night Country's version of Twist and Shout might be the absolute nadir of the slow, spooky song cover trend.
Shake it up, baby, now. Twist and shout. Come on, baby, now. Come on and work it on out.
They also used a cover of Save Tonight by Eagle Eye Cherry at one point. And again,
Save Tonight.
It's on. You're,
till the break of dawn.
You're doing it better than the actual recording could be. Like, it's just, and again, so divisive online. Cause you're seeing, I was checking Reddit, and again, people are like, it's obviously to reflect the dark and uncertain tone of the show's finale and the plot of the show. And I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
love don't come tomorrow. Tomorrow I'll be gone. Stay tonight. Fight the break of dawn. Come tomorrow. Tomorrow I'll be gone.
Sometimes songs are just too big. Like, you just shouldn't be going anywhere near them.
No, totally. I mean, I think you're hitting the nail on the head about this idea of recycling IP is overdone in general within Hollywood to the point that it becomes exhausting for viewers. We've seen the burnout of a lot of Disney's biggest franchises. Marvel and Star Wars have had to try to reconfigure their model because audiences are just like, I can't take any more of this. And of course, Hollywood has replicated this model of just using pre-existing IP because it's cheaper to market. And one way that you can market maybe you can market new work is by putting old songs with it, or, you know, just trying to constantly find things that are the right balance of familiar and novel is frankly the whole model of making pop songs. And I think any good culture is constantly pulling on our expectations in that sort of way. And so that this has become such a fad of trying to pair your work with pre-existing IP to make it cool, or to make it feel somewhat safe and familiar, or to alter our emotion of that original song. It does. The problem is now when it happens, it actually kind of breaks the fourth wall. We know that this is happening. Like, oh, there's that song that I know. I'm no longer paying attention to the thing. And I'm now paying attention. Why did they make these choices? It can actually take us out of the work itself, especially that it has become such an overdone style.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's another recent example, and I hate to dunk on it because it is, I didn't actually realize this at the time, but it's performed by an Irish artist, Lisa Hannigan, and it's a cover. It's from the most recent season of Fargo, and it's a cover of Toxic by Britney Spears, composed by Jeff Russo, but it's the vocals are Lisa Hannigan, and it's actually not a bad cover, but it's, again, trying to say this without spoiling, it's soundtracking a scene between Jon Hamm's character and Juno Temple's character, and they do not have a good relationship, to put it mildly. And even at that point, I was like, this feels so glib. I'm like, of all the songs in all the world. And again, I'm looking at Reddit threads and forums, and people are fighting that it's like, no, it's absolutely apt because they have this toxic relationship and he feels ownership over her character and stuff like that. But it was just, as you said, it's that I've never been so violently sucked out of a moment. It's like in Severance. I'm referencing a lot of TV, but you know when the camera zooms out and like the work person is there, whatever. Yeah. Anyway, it's just, I don't know.
I boldly watched this clip that you sent me, actually, which I say boldly because I am currently on episode 4 of the current season of Fargo, and the clip that you're talking about is from, I think, episode 8.
Yes.
Now, by episode 4, it's pretty clear the direction of the toxicity of the relationship between these two people that is going to happen. I knew that I'd be getting some spoilers from watching your clip, but it was worth it to experience this musical moment. Now, it's very different to be in the middle of an hour-long serial drama thriller and get a Britney Spears drop. It's different than just watching the YouTube clip. I won't lie, I enjoyed watching the YouTube clip a little bit because I felt that, on the one hand, it's absolutely absurd for Britney Spears to be appearing in a television show, which, does it take place in the 90s? Or is it contemporary?
This season is the most contemporary, so season 5 is 2019.
It's 2019. Okay. So, all right. So it's not anachronistic. That's fine. But we are in the Midwest, and the character John Hamm plays is a sheriff who is not a very nice sheriff, and he's going after Juno Temple's character, his ex-wife, and that's enough. We don't need any more details.
Yeah.
And the sheriff wears a cowboy hat, and he's in the cold Minnesota, or I guess is he in South Dakota? I can't remember.
If you're asking me about American geography, we're both lost here, I'm afraid.
He's in the cold Midwest winter wearing a cowboy hat, often seen riding a horse. Imagery which does not link up with Britney Spears. So Britney Spears can definitely take you out of sort of like the general aesthetic of where we are. Nonetheless, the lyrics do pointedly tie in to the entire relationship between these two people. And I think it's a moment where if you're going to do this vibe, you better do it well. And I think the lyrics work.
When we have this discussion, obviously I don't think the original doesn't work in that context either. But I see both sides of the argument.
The original would not work here. There's a lot of things that I do think work. Baby, can't you see him calling? He's literally been trying to reach her this entire season. A guy like you should wear a warning. He is a bad guy. And he does. He's got a badge. It's dangerous. I'm falling. There's danger all around. There's no escape. I can't wait. I need a hit. Baby, give me it. You're dangerous. I'm loving it. The toxic relationship between the two of them is apparent throughout the entire season, so a song like this can work. And another way that it works to a certain degree is that the original Bollywood sample that Toxic uses has this and all of this like slow gliding strings that when done in the cover, they're slowed down and they're emphasized and they have this slow gliding string orchestral sound that is almost reminiscent of like a Hitchcock Psycho kind of thing. So what I'm trying to say here is that I think in the translation of this song, maybe even like Creep, I think both these are sort of enhancing or altering some of the emotions that are inherent within the song, and could potentially fit the scene. Now, at the same time, as I said, you could be deep into this season and be like, Britney Spears, what are you doing here? You don't belong. But I'll give you one more, just one more thing. What is Britney Spears' core narrative been over the last couple of years?
Escaping abuse and reclaiming power. And, you've got me back in the corner. It's a bop. It's a bop, girls. It's a bop. That is fair. A lot of fair
Listen,
points.
Listen, it can go either way. If you don't like it, there's very good reason that you don't like it. Fundamentally, soundtracking should not be announcing itself very much. It's background music. It should be building on the emotion, not of the song. Actually, good soundtracking in this example, first it needs to enhance the emotion of the scene, and then hopefully it's also playing off the expectations of the existing song. There's a lot of you're dealing with a lot of messy stuff. If your initial reaction is I don't like it, you're probably right. You are right. That was your feeling. So I felt like it was a bop. It was a flop for you. and that is perfectly okay. I have no problem with that.
Do you ever see this trend coming to an end? And when I say that, I obviously don't mean people are going to cover songs for the rest of time. And as you said, there are barriers in getting original songs into film and TV. So like covering makes sense from that perspective. But I suppose I mean this particular trend of these spooky kind of dark covers. Are we at the peak of that yet or no? Do you see it continuing?
I would like to think that once something becomes a joke on SNL, everyone's in on the joke and we kind of realize that we need to find some kind of new cultural meme to latch on to. I don't think I have that much faith in Hollywood to like make continuously original work. Like, so much is just rehashing things that have been done before. I remember seeing the content strategist, whoever the chief content strategist at Netflix was like, Netflix's job is not to make a gourmet meal. We're in the business of making hamburgers. We make cheap, yummy hamburgers, and sometimes we make gourmet hamburgers. But at the end of the day, we're making hamburgers, all variations of hamburgers. And you know, if that's the content strategy, someone's going to make the cheap version, you know, the greasy, slimy $2 cheeseburger, which, you know, can be completely delectable, and it's going to include every cliche you could possibly imagine. So I don't think this cliche is going to go anywhere. I think that we probably should anticipate to see it less frequently in, like, Oscar bait and prestige drama, where it has been featured so heavily, and maybe it will trickle down into the less prestigious dramas, into your procedurals. But I don't know. That simply because I think that, you know, the Oscar bait is materials trying to play to a quote unquote more intelligent audience, if you will, that might be in on these trends. So maybe this is a fairly classist remark, but I just don't have that much faith in Hollywood completely turning on its turning around and fixing all of its problems in any way serious, let alone, you know, this very minor grievance that we share. Like,
is there any
representation? Who's making movies? Who's in movies? What the stories are about? Like, this is probably what they should be worried about.
Yeah, we're like, no,
your own
stop.
Kind of music. No, they're not going to stop doing it.
Oh, you're right. Okay, well, in that case, not to put you on the spot, but is there any pop song, any song in particular that you'd love to see get the moody, freaky, scary treatment?
I feel like another Britney one that is deserved is Hit Me Baby One More Time, because part of the lore of that song is that it was written by Max Martin, who, you know, is his first language is Swedish, and he thought he was using a catchphrase that was like, hit me back on the phone, you know, call me back. And it has this underlying tone of, like, domestic abuse, which is really dark. I think, unfortunately, so often these pop songs, like Toxic, is being used in a way of demonstrating some kind of you know, violence. And so there is violence built into Hit Me Baby One More Time. I wouldn't be surprised if someone tries to comment on that. That's what comes immediately to mind. Yeah.
If it hasn't been done already, I'm sure it probably has. But now that I'm saying it out loud, maybe. I'll investigate that.
Yeah, it probably has.
Add it to
you know what
episode.
I really want? I want, I feel like someone's got to use, and it's probably even been done, is the slowed down horror version of Teenage Dream by Katy Perry.
That like, speaks if didn't entirely it, like, to like, all of like, my interests.
I feel like the film like Bodies, Bodies, Bodies should have used it if it didn't, because there's like, you know, all of the teenage horror films which are like, we're gonna live forever, we're gonna party forever, tonight is the night, like it's never gonna end except for there's a killer. So I feel like Teenage Dream is ready.
You know, when you just said there, when you were like, you know what I want, immediately I was like, Wannabe, the Spice Girls. Imagine that again. Horror kind of style, and you have the Gasper. It's
gotta
like,
get
I
with my friends.
And then it's the demon, whatever, eating brains. Brilliant. Maybe I don't think this is a flop. Maybe I've undermined my entire pitch in this entire concept. Brilliant. Perfect.
But you know what we've just done there? What? We have taken this thing which comes from prestige drama and inserted it into sort of like absurdist horror, which is probably where it belongs now. I think it's going to go from high class to low class. Sorry, you know, silly horror films. You're wonderful. I don't mean to say that you're low class, but it's just like, it's become too, you can't do this and be serious with it anymore.
Yeah, because you're kind of already, forgot to mention this earlier, but I may as well mention it as we're talking about quote unquote low class, but reality TV, it constantly happens on, I don't know if you watch Love Island, I have watched so many episodes regretfully, but they constantly do it to soundtrack dumpings to kind of drum up tension. The Traitors as well as another one. It used to be such a big talking point, like coming up to the Banishings or the Round Tables. The most recent season, there was one, it was like Mr. Sandman, but again it was like Mr. Sandman, do bring me a dream. Like everyone terrified that they're gonna be sent home.
Oh my gosh.
That's where it belongs.
Is that is that I have my own trash reality television, but I forget, is that the series that's like 50 episodes long?
The Traitors Love Island is, yeah, it's on 6 nights a week for 8 weeks.
Okay, yes. Okay. So I watched 2 episodes of it one time in some random season. I don't remember. I think it was like Heart of the Pandemic, Desperate for Escape. And I watched 2 episodes and I was like, this isn't that good. How much longer is it? And I was like, oh no, it's this long. And so I literally was like, I'm reading the Wikipedia immediately. I'm going to save hours and hours of my life.
Oh, Charlie,
I felt great about it.
I could have learned multiple languages in the amount of time I spent watching Love Island. It's pathetic. And like the thing, all Love Island fans will tell you, yeah, the first 2 weeks are shit, but if you hang on, like it gets really good for like 2 weeks. And then the last 2 weeks are kind of shit again. But then the last week, then brilliant. That's all Love Island fans will tell you. So you know what? You did the right thing. You did the right thing tapping out. Charlie, I have loved every second of this and I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. Where can people find out more about you and about Switched On Pop?
Well, I make Switched On Pop, the podcast that can be found anywhere you subscribe to podcasts. I am at Charlie Harding on most social platforms, though the entire social internet is an absolute disaster right now. We should probably all just leave. And instead listen to podcasts. So check out Switched On Pop, all the places. We talk about all the pop music. It's a lot of fun.
It is great. You're one of my faves. And I'm very, very, very grateful that you came on to Flop Culture. And you are welcome back to talk about a flop at any point, because I'm sure that would be extremely interesting.
I appreciate it.
Charlie Harding, thank you so much for joining me on Flop Culture. Much appreciated.
Thank you very much.
The hugest of thanks to Charlie for joining me. I'm an enormous fan of Switched On Pop and I feel very grateful that he gave up his time to do Flop Culture and talk about this with me. I'll link some of my favourite episodes of Switched On Pop in the show notes, but shout them out here too if you're looking for somewhere to start. You can jump in anywhere, but these are the ones that got me into the show fully. Why are pop songs getting sped up? This is a trend we're seeing as a result of TikTok. Great episode on that. The case of the missing key change. Brilliant episode, very funny episode. They did a 2-part series on songwriting camps that I found fascinating. If you're in any way interested in how the business of music works, they did a really good interview with Noah Kahan, not an artist that I had been hugely familiar with, but I felt like I got to know a lot better through that interview. And most recently, I suppose they did an episode on Beyonce's country roots and analysing Beyonce's most recent country output and digging into it a little bit. And that was absolutely fascinating. As someone who is ferociously excited for Cowboy Carter, we have the name for Act 2, Cowboy Carter. Very excited about that. We will be talking about that actually on Patreon with former guest Zara Hedeman. So keep your ears and eyes out for that. It's patreon.com/flapculture. And also to go back to Switched On Pop, they have a great newsletter as well if you want to subscribe to that, which I will link in the show notes. Anyway, it's been a pleasure, as always, to have you here with me. This has been Flop Culture. We are on Instagram and TikTok. Come over and follow us there. It's at flopculture_pod. I would love all of your ratings. Get them in. 4 or 5 stars. We love to see them, girls. We're getting a few new ones on Spotify. Very much appreciate that. Love you. I see you. We mentioned Patreon, patreon.com/flopculture. New episodes this month. We have Owen Keane is back. We did a recap of Fleabag Series 2, Episode 3. Orla Condon, host of Don't Quote Me and My Bottom Paper, came to talk about Love Island All Stars. Is it a bop or is it a flop? And shortly, you will be getting an episode talking about Ariana Grande's Eternal Sunshine with writer and DJ and former guest Louise Brutton. Very excited for you to hear that. We're also on YouTube. If you want to watch some of the episodes, it's Fionnuala J. Come over, come watch, come subscribe. I'd really appreciate it. This has been Flop Culture, as I mentioned. This has been edited, as always, by Adam Shanahan. I will see you all next Thursday for another episode on Flops. Bye-bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for ways to win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.